Hey, college football fans. This podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to bring you college football's finest. The 2010 Rose Bowl game presented by Citi. This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast.
College Football Podcast.
Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the ESPNU College Football Podcast. It's Tuesday, December 15th. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com, live and in studio in Bristol, Connecticut. Beautiful, gray, dank, damp, gray, ugly Bristol, Connecticut. And joining me from hopefully nicer Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is Beano Cook.
Definitely nicer.
Good. Well, send that to the east if you could, please. You usually do.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, Beano, as we wait for the bowls, we're in the post-All-Star, post-Heisman, pre-bowl lull. Was a bit of news today. The Big Ten going to issue a statement that it will look anew at expansion over the next 12 to 18 months. What do you make of this?
Well, when they talked about expanding the Big Ten years and years ago, I always thought the logical choice was Missouri. Now that's before the Big 12. Missouri has more in common with Illinois, Indiana, and those schools than they do with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and Nebraska. But obviously that's not going to happen. They're going to go after a team of the Big East, and if they get one, I'm afraid it will be the ruination of the Big East. I think the logical schools are Rutgers, Syracuse, and Pitt.
Yes.
And I think that those teams go in, they're going to have a tough time competing in all those other sports. Syracuse is a private institution. They're going to have to all at once compete in a lot more sports. Pitt is semi. They get State A, but they're not a state university, state-related. They would have the best chance of competing in all those other sports. And Rutgers, I think Rutgers would have a very difficult time. They want it for one reason. They want to have a title game. They want to have a game in December the way the ACC and the Big 12 and the SEC, those conferences do. That's why they have wanted. That's the only reason they wanted.
Well, let me ask you this, one point I'd make vis-a-vis Pitt, Rutgers, and Syracuse is that it's very important to university presidents that schools be a member of the Association of American Universities. That's sort of the academic BCS,
yes.
And all three of them, as well as Missouri, are all in the all four of them that you've brought up are in the AAU. So that hurdle is cleared. But to me, the only reason that you would venture as far east as Rutgers or Syracuse is because you're trying to get into New York City. Do you think either one of those schools brings you Manhattan?
No, I don't. I don't think so. I don't, unless they become a national power. Penn State never did until they became a national power.
Yeah.
I don't think, no. I think they want Notre Dame, and they can wait forever. The second coming will happen before Notre Dame, is not an independent.
Well, they're like a bad, like a bad Hollywood love story. Notre Dame wants to do it, and Big Ten doesn't want to do it, and then the Big Ten wants to do it, and Notre Dame's not interested, and it's been going on that way, on and off for 100 years.
It's going to go on for 100 more. I mean, Notre Dame's not going to give that TV money up.
No.
I think if they came to him and said, "You keep all the TV money for your home games." Well, the Big Ten isn't going to do that. Do you think Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, well, we're going to say, wait a second, now forget it.
Sure.
I think the Big Ten's doing this to get a playoff game. That's all they're doing. BC has nothing in common with the ACC teams. I think BC made a stupid mistake. And I think they're going to, I think the alumni I talked to, they agree. It was a dumb move on the part of Boston College.
I thought it was short-sighted.
Yeah, that's a good word to put it, yeah.
And Gene DeFilippo's defense, the athletic director who sort of drove the engine on that, since BC has gone into the ACC, to this point, they've been very successful athletically. You wonder about the cost in terms of fan base and interest.
Well, you say very successful. Wait till Florida State and Miami return.
Yeah, which they will.
And they will.
Yes.
They're like the tide. They're out now. They're going to come back in.
Well, I thought you meant Alabama, but yeah. Okay, I get it.
But BC then, I think BC's going to have problems in football. They played with a championship game 2 years in a row. Let's see what happens. And in basketball, everything is done for Tobacco Road.
Yes.
You got all those schools in North Carolina. And they're going to run. You're not going to get the key call. With, a minute to go and the score's tied and there's a block charge, it's going to go against you, BC. Yeah, it isn't going against North Carolina, I guarantee you that.
Bino with a very pragmatic view of the world.
So I'm righto. Yeah, you can argue all you want. I'm right.
Well, let me read you this quote from the president of The Ohio State University, Gordon Gee, to the Columbus Dispatch. Quote, "We have to be thoroughly modern and realize the world has moved on, and having a playoff for the Big Ten championship makes sense. I'm not planning a stake in the ground on that issue, but it's something we now need to tackle." To the Columbus Dispatch, Adam Rittenberg, our Big Ten blogger, has got that item up today. It's like all of a sudden they are making the connection that one of the reasons we are not competitive is that we don't have a 12th game, nationally competitive.
Well, I say they can have that.
Yeah.
But they're still not going to be able to beat the Southeast, the Big 12 or the Pac 10. They're not going to be able to.
That's a talent thing.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with coaching. It's location, location, location. The athletes are in Texas, California, and Florida.
Where the sun shines.
That's where the sun shines.
Yeah.
And they can do it in basketball, but they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it in football. Not going to do it.
But, I had an interesting discussion on this topic yesterday with David Albright, who is the editor in charge for... Our boss. Who
it's
does
my
not,
boss, yeah.
Yeah, who does not... Everybody who doesn't work here, Dave... he's in charge of all our college coverage, and we were discussing talent base and why is it that the big quick defensive lineman that makes the SEC. He said, why is the SEC still so good on defense and still has those great 17-14 games that you don't see anywhere else? And I said, well, the coaches tell me that it's the defensive lineman that, you have to have the big, quick defensive lineman and the big, quick offensive lineman, and that those are the hardest players to recruit. And it seems like they are more available, or at least they show up more at SEC schools.
Well, because of integration.
Yes.
Yeah, without integration, forget it.
I think you're right.
Oh, I know I'm right.
I think you're right, and you start talking about an issue like this, and everybody, the hair on the back of everybody's neck stands up.
Well, I'm telling a fact.
Yeah, but
when you're my age, you don't worry about it. If you have a wife and an ex-wife, you worry about it.
Well, I have a wife and three kids, so I was bringing it up.
Yeah.
I was sending the flares up, but... No, I think you're right, and I don't know. I'm not going to even attempt to discuss or figure out what it has to do exactly with race. But the fact is that there are more big, fast, quick defensive and offensive linemen in the SEC. I mean, and what I intend to do is go look at first round draft choices and All-America teams and see if you can quantify it that way that there are more from the SEC. And I don't know that that's the case, but. It's certainly the impression that both of us
have. Well, there are more.
Yeah, more.
I mean, the Big Ten schools might have one or two, but the Southeast Conference schools have six or seven. That's the difference.
Well, and where they are not, when they do not come from the South, they seem to come from the Pacific Islands, and in that sense, you know, in Domokong Sioux of Nebraska, in my very deft transition to us discussing the Heisman race, Sioux finished fourth, the closest Heisman race in history. Beano, it made for riveting television Saturday night.
Oh yes, I thought I'm sometimes critical of our coverage. I talk about we do too many promos. I thought the show was tremendous. I thought Chris Fowler was excellent. I thought it was one of the best hours that ESPN did all year. The promos and all the graphics in the bottom, I just don't think they're necessary a lot of times. But and I've said so. So I don't hesitate in saying it. I thought the show was absolutely fantastic.
Well, and I have not watched the entire show yet. I saw some of it live, and the rest I have on DVR, but I was at the Army-Navy game. So I missed a chunk of it. But what I hear, the features were good. You know, Toby Gerhart giving a tour of the Stanford campus, and Colt McCoy and Tim Tebow going to lunch at the Carnegie Deli.
How much are the sandwiches?
I think the sandwiches are, you know, it's been a while since I've been there. I want to say they're 15 or 16 now, but and they still are large enough to feed a family of six.
And you were at your first Army-Navy game.
Yes.
You made a good observation, I thought, when we talked yesterday about the ceremony at the end of a game where the two teams stand before the brigade and corps and sing the alma maters. You said it's more of a TV. You feel it more when you watch it on TV than when you were there.
Yeah.
Good observation. It's a great – I can see if you're there – you really don't get, you know, you don't really hear the songs and stuff. That's good observation. But,
well, I was down with the teams, and I'm standing in the back, and you know, both sides very respectful of each song, but clearly that, you know, the Navy players aren't singing the Army alma mater and the Army kids.
Navy.
You know, they're not singing Blue and Gold, and what was noticeable to me was that, you know, they go to the Army first, and the Army players just sort of walked over there with their heads down very solemnly. And the minute the song ended, the Navy kids whooped and yelled and screamed and sprinted over to their delirious fellow midshipmen. And they had a rousing rendition of Blue and Gold.
Which is a great alma mater.
Yeah, and the senior offensive guard, Osei Asante, you know, leaped up and helped the band leader lead the band. I mean, that was the kind of great thrilling emotion that we associate with that whole little ceremony.
Yeah, I guess on TV it's just my heart pounds. I love it.
Well, you know, watching the Corps march in onto the field before the game, and then they exit the field into the stands, and then the brigade comes in, and that was fascinating. And I found two seniors from West Point who were who were supervising the color guard, so they were standing on the sideline, and I just stood there as their fellow cadets marched in. I said, okay, tell me everything here. And for instance, I did not know, they march in, they are 12 rows of eight, but that's not the entire company, you know, but they want it to look good, so they only have 12 rows of eight. And the ones that don't make it, which are usually the guys who don't march, the men and women who aren't as good marchers, they were already sitting in the stands.
You know? Oh.
Because I asked them, I said, why are those guys already in the stands? He said, well, you know, we just do it 12 by 8.
I never knew that.
Yeah, and why are the women in the back? And they sort of snickered. They said, well, we arrange ourselves when we march by height. So it's not a male-female thing.
Okay.
It's a height thing, you know. The midshipmen do none of that. You know, they line up the way they line up every day. And they, you know, there was, I saw one, company. I pardon me if you went to the Naval Academy and you're not a company, but a group that marched in, and there was a had to be a 5'2" female midshipman in the second row. So they clearly don't arrange themselves by height. They didn't march quite as crisply, and as someone said to me before the before the game, well, you know, on a ship there's only so much marching you need to do, so it's not quite
good.
As not quite as important.
Pretty good. Obvious observation. Yeah.
So that was thrilling, and the whole day, you know, it just makes you feel good about the service academies and about the sport and about the marriage of the two, and that, you know, football and this rivalry is very important, and the service academies are very important, and I think everybody, I think moving the game to the second Saturday in December will revive it with the viewing audience and give it its rightful place as an important event.
The one thing at the end of the game, nobody leaves.
No.
They want to see the ceremony.
Right. They want to see the song. And
oh, it's just...
And Army was competitive this year, which is the first time in... the 3 years ago, they were competitive, but that was a 12-point game. They were competitive Saturday. It was a two-touchdown game, but they are on the rebound. They are coming back. And if you didn't watch it, you know, we're going to pound you next year to watch it. I can't emphasize it strongly enough. And we strayed far afield from the Heisman. Did you, from the actual vote, the closest vote ever, Mark Ingram edging Toby Gerhart, what'd you think of that?
Well, I thought Ingram would win, but I thought McCoy would be second. I voted McCoy number one and Ingram number two. But, I was surprised at that. That McCoy got beat. I read a story about, I don't know where it was, that the championship game for McCoy probably cost him the Heisman Trophy, and the championship game for Alabama won it for Ingram.
I think that's fair.
And if it had been the reverse of what happened, and McCoy had the poor game against A&M and the great game and the championship game, and Ingram had the great game against Auburn instead of getting the bad game, or he got hurt, and then instead of a good game, have the bad game against championship game, McCoy or Gerhart would have won.
Well, and what's interesting about that also, Beano, is that, you know, the Pac-10 has moved some games to championship Saturday, but Stanford did not do it. And what I don't know is whether Stanford did not do that as a matter for academic reasons, if they did not do it because they haven't been very good and the league didn't want to put them out there. You know, because if you think about who played that last weekend, it was
who did win the Washington-California game?
Washington beat Cal 42-10.
Yes.
You know, Cal, three losses of, they got stomped on three times, but, you know, they won the big game, so it was a successful season for them.
As a Stanford grad, had to be disappointed in the Cal game.
Well, sure. And, but, you know, you have to wonder if Toby Gerhart had played that first weekend in December, if the Pac-10 had put Stanford into one of those final weekend games, you know, would there have been a difference? And I don't know the answer to that. And we never will. And Toby Gerhart will have to be satisfied with being the best number two finisher in Heisman history.
Yeah, it's amazing how close it was.
It really is. It was a matter.
We thought it would be, though.
Yeah, we thought it would be close. I didn't dare, predict it would be the closest, but I thought it would be close. And I think that contributed to how good the show was, because that tension was there. You know,
yeah, definitely.
You know, in an Academy Award sort of way.
But they did a great job. Our people. Believe me, when you said, maybe you would disagree, I thought our people did an excellent job on the show, and it gets bigger every year. They had a shot before the show was over on some billboard or something at in Times Square or something. Mark Ingram won the Heisman Trophy.
That's pretty cool.
I mean it gets bigger and bigger every year. Look, I've said this before. 100 years from now, nobody's going to remember who the vice president is but they're going to know who won the Heisman Trophy.
Well, you know, we did, as part of the 75th anniversary.
75th year
of the Heisman.
Next year is the 75th anniversary.
Thank you, yes. Yeah, we did a big production at .com where we did a little a picture and a little short write-up about each player. And Jim Plunkett said to me, he said, "I won the Super Bowl. I was a Super Bowl MVP. I played in the league for 15 years. And when I'm introduced, the first thing they say is Heisman Trophy winner.
And the obit.
And the obit will
Jim
be the same way.
Comma,
yeah.
The winner of the 1970 Heisman Trophy from Stanford, comma, died yesterday.
That's absolutely
That's
true.
It?
Yeah. No. Yeah. And,
it's like winning the Pulitzer Prize.
Well, I'll take your word for that.
Yes.
I didn't win one.
You will.
There you go. I'd have to go back to a newspaper, I think, though. I don't plan on doing that. Two head coaching hires we want to talk about. Beano, Brian Kelly made it official with Notre Dame. That was only
no surprise.
Expected when we last podcasted.
Yeah.
And Turner Gill goes to Kansas, where he will coach against against Nebraska, where he was a star and was an assistant coach for 13 years. And that's, to me, weird. I mean, it's just strange and how odd for Nebraska fans. I can't think of a coach in a same division like that who arrives as a young coach. You know, Spurrier at South Carolina, to me, is not the same thing because he was at Florida. But to me, it's like an Alabama hero coaching at Ole Miss, which I guess Steve Sloan did back in the day, but it's going to be very unusual when Kansas plays at Nebraska next fall.
Turner Gill did a good job at Buffalo.
He sure did.
Sure did. And it's still tough. It's to win at Kansas in football. The state doesn't produce that many blue chippers. They have to share them with Kansas State. Not going to be easy. And it's obvious that Nebraska is slowly coming back. They're not going to dominate the way they used to, but it's obvious that they're moving back to being the team to beat in that division.
Well, let me ask you this about Brian Kelly. He made the comment on ESPN 1000 in Chicago this week that he might be 1 second away from never going to Notre Dame, because if Nebraska had hung on and beaten Texas, and Cincinnati had ended up playing Alabama for the national championship, of course he would still be with the Bearcats. And it's a matter-of-fact statement. It's absolutely understandable, but it just sort of put in stark view for everybody. You know, you start thinking of all the one-second what-ifs in college football, and this is just the most recent one.
Yep, Notre Dame would have waited.
For a month?
Yes. They waited for Weiss longer.
Yes.
They got to Weiss after going after a couple other coaches, but they would wait.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
That's your opinion.
Would you wait a month if Alabama was famed with the national title and Celia Ward was still a cheerleader? Would you said, "I can't see until after the football game"? You would have waited.
Yes, that is true.
And I would have, too.
I would have,
longer
too,
than that.
And then I would have awakened.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, Caleb Ward was a cheerleader at Alabama. She grew up in Mississippi, and she was in some good movies. In fact, she was the wife in The Fugitive.
Great movie.
Unfortunately, she got bumped off early in that movie.
Yes, that was. Those flashbacks were very good.
Very good.
Yeah. Now, yeah, Celia Ward, she could start for me. There's no question. Yes,
she's the complete package.
Yes, and likes college football.
So
what's not to like?
Yeah, she was once interviewed at Larry King, I believe, and they had a picture with her in her Alabama sweater, cheerleader, with Bear Bryant. For once, Bear Bryant, in my opinion, was second choice.
I just want to point out that, yes, my wife could start for me, too. She also likes college football.
Oh, I know that.
So let's all dig ourselves out of that hole. Bino, before we get to the emails, I would like to point out on behalf of the entire ESPN family and producer Jay Soderberg, who handed me this, play ESPN College Bowl Mania for a chance to win $2,000 cash. All you have to do is pick the winners of the bowl games and rank them based on your confidence. Go to ESPN.com and search Bowl Mania to play for free. So if you can rank the bowls and get the winners right and go 1 to 34,
oh, one of those, yeah,
you're a better man than I. In the emails, Bino, we got, I actually like this one. As a faithful listener, Ivan and Bino, as a faithful listener, I must admit that I'm saddened by the fact that in 2 years of listening to the podcast, you two have mentioned my beloved Vanderbilt Commodores only twice. Ivan made an incorrect pick choosing the Commodores to beat Tennessee last year.
Ivan and Bino, you're wrong.
Okay, thank you, Jay. And the classic 1922 Michigan game pep talk. He goes on to list all the current NFL head coaches who have Vanderbilt ties, ranking from interim coach Perry Fuel at Buffalo to Ken Wisenhunt at Arizona to Rod Dowhower, Bill Parcells, Buddy Ryan, Tommy Prothrow, all made their stops at Vanderbilt on the way to the NFL.
I didn't know that about Prothrow.
Yeah, I guess he must have coached for Red Sanders.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because Red Sanders then went to UCLA, right?
Correct.
Since Vanderbilt has to win at something besides graduation rates, can any other college boast such an accolade, signed Toby Atkins in Nashville? We are speechless, Toby.
Well, I would say Stanford.
Yes. All those great, the John Ralston staff, the Bill Walsh staff. I think the Bill Walsh staff, there was George Seifert, there was Dowhower, gosh, I know there are a few more. And then Ralston had Walsh. I think Mike White went through there, but I don't know if he ever went to the NFL as a head coach. I don't think he did.
No.
Yeah, that would take some research, Toby, but it is a great point. Let's see, and Kevin from Sioux Falls, Idaho, based on our mention a show or two ago about college football historical books, wanted to know if we had any college football books that we would suggest for gift ideas here in the holiday season. Anything ring your bell there, Bino?
Well, I think Jim Dent's book...
About the 64 Notre Dame
game.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah, that's very good.
Yes.
And if you can go
Redemption
on...
Redemption is the name of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you can go on the Internet and Dan Jenkins, I always get it. Is it Saturday's America?
Yes.
Or Saturday's America.
Yeah.
Which is one of the best I ever read. And also, he wrote another book on college football I love, Let Me Tell You One More Thing.
Yes.
And those two, John, there's a book out on the 63 Navy team by Connolly, is it?
Oh, I don't know that book.
Yeah, I think William Connolly. It's at the President's Team.
Oh, it just came out. Yes,
yeah.
I did see something about that.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's very good.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Bill Connolly, emailed me and
It's very good.
It looks good, but neither one of us has read it.
I've read,
a lot
of it, yeah.
You read a lot of it, okay.
Yeah, yes.
All right, good.
Especially the only defeat my team had that year was the Navy Pitt. So I skipped over that chapter. But it was very good. I'm trying to think a few other ones top of my head, but those...
that'll give Kevin a start.
Yeah, and we highly recommend anything Dan Jenkins wrote in college.
Yes.
And I know our host is being humble, but he has a book.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, the Maisel Report.
That's
right. That's, I hope, still available.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Jay. If Dan Jenkins wrote a menu, I would recommend, reading that. Finally, Bino, Hall of Fame birthdays this week. Ernie Davis, December 14th, the late Ernie Davis, the winner of the 1920 61 Heisman Trophy.
And played on the national championship team in 59.
That's true. Also born on December 14th, Charlie Trippi.
Oh, one of the greats.
At Georgia, right?
No, North Carolina.
I'm sorry,
North Carolina. He was runner-up in the Heisman Trophy twice. He 2 years in a row, he finished second. He got the name. I always thought it was from high school. He got the name. He got it while he was in the service in World War II. Great story on him was he was going to go to Duke, and then the World War II started, and he was drafted. He was 18 or 19 years old, starting in a service team up in Bainbridge Navy. It was unbelievable. And somebody said he runs like a choo-choo, and that helped to be remembered.
Wait a minute now. Are you saying Choo Choo Justice or Charlie Trippi?
Choo Choo Justice.
Oh, okay. No, I said Charlie Trippi.
Oh, you said Charlie Trippi.
Yeah.
Oh, I apologize.
Yeah, no worries.
Oh, yeah, Georgia.
Yeah, okay.
I apologize. Ring that thing. Go ahead.
Ivan and Bino, you're wrong.
I was wrong. I was talking about Charlie Justice, but again, Trippi. Frank Broyles, you talk to him. When you talk about great running backs, he talks about Trippi. Trippi that played before the war and then played on the 46 team, which finished third in the country, Georgia, behind Notre Dame and Michigan. And no, not Notre Dame and Army.
Army, right.
And there was no stink. I asked Ed Pope who went to Georgia and as a columnist in Miami, if there was a stink about not being number one, he said, no, I don't think. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Today, there'd be a big stink.
Oh, yeah, different. Yeah,
different era. But Trippi then went into the pros and won the championship for the Cardinals, Chicago Cardinals in 47. But he's one of the great ones. From Pittston, Pennsylvania, they named the high school stadiums named after him.
And really?
And to this day, I have no idea. Now, this is back in the 30s or early 40s, how he ended up in Georgia. I have no idea. I mean, that just didn't happen.
I'll have to look into that.
And Frank Sinkwitz from Youngstown, he ended up at Georgia.
And stayed, became a beer distributor in Athens.
Yeah, that was probably part of the, how he got down there. but I mean, I've never been able to find out how that happened. Ed Pope think there was some sugar daddy up there. He said that's the only explanation he has. Somebody up here was a great Georgia fan, alumnus, and took care of him.
That's shocking news.
Yeah,
there was an NCAA violation.
That's just Pope's theory, not mine.
Yeah, okay, good, because we wouldn't want to besmirch any.
No.
Of course, none of that ever happened in those days.
No.
Let's pop that balloon right here and now. Well, Bino, I think in the spirit of Hanukkah, it's time to say that we fooled them again.
Yeah, I mean, even at Christmas,
yes,
we're con, man.
I think they're more gullible now.
Yeah, well, we're con.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, holidays are here. Yeah. We're still Easter. If we have a show that week, we're still going to try to con you. We fooled you.
That's right. That's right. So we will talk to you next week right before Christmas and as the bowls are really ginning up in earnest. And in the meantime, for Bino Cook, this is Ivan Maisel. Thanks for downloading us.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com. Hey, college football fans, this podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to present the 2010 Citi BCS National Championship Game.